tell you about a product that I am using personally, and I really think this works. You know, beetroot juice has been used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, and studies show that it can increase athletic performance and stamina by 16%. So call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com, and you can get a 30-day supply free of this great product. It comes with your first order, and it's backed by a money-back guarantee. 800-738-2198. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today's discussion is with Dr. Elena George, who is an ear, nose, and throat specialist practicing in Atlanta, Georgia. She's last of a dying breed. She's an independent physician in private practice. Yes, she can put her patients in the hospital when she wants to, but she's not working for the hospital. She's written a great book called Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control, and how doctors and patients working together can rebuild a better system. And in part one, we outlined all the flaws, all the downsides, the lack of compassion, the lack of custom therapy that is inherent in our current system, and it's going to be getting worse. And you propose solutions. So take it away, Dr. George.
Well, I think one of the main thing that we have to do is change our mindset. I think doctors and patients really have to start valuing themselves again. We've both been devalued in this system. Doctors have been told that what they charge patients, you know, it's someone else gets to decide what that is. And patients have been told that the care that they're seeking is not necessary or unacceptable. And I think if we both start working together and really take our power back, we can actually change the system from within.
And so, okay, that's a great principle on which to begin, but how can we practically implement that? Because, I mean, clearly the deck is stacked. Insurance companies, you know, everybody feels they must pay a premium for insurance, even if they don't like the doctors that they go to, because just in case, you know, they get hit by a truck or they, you know, come down with cancer, they need the coverage, because otherwise it would be catastrophic for the vast majority of people, unless you're Donald Trump or, you know, independently wealthy. How can we implement that kind of spirit in a kind of a renaissance of our healthcare system?
Well, I think knowledge is power. And one of the things that people don't know, because of course they haven't read a 2,000-page bill, is that there is something called medical cost sharing, which never gets talked about, which is written into the Affordable Care Act.
What's the term again? Medical what?
Medical cost sharing.
And cost sharing. Cost sharing. Okay.
Correct. And this is companies who actually use the model of individuals covering themselves. So across the country, there are a consortium of patients, men, women, families, who pay into a pot, and they access it when they need health care. And it's not insurance. It actually works better than insurance. And the company that I want to use as an example is Liberty HealthShare. It is started off as a very small Christian-based organization, and it changed its model to more of a libertarian model. So you don't have to belong to a church. You don't have to have a pastor write a letter for you. You don't even have to be Christian, but you do have to want to take care of your own healthcare needs. And what they've done is they've created an amazing parallel system. They negotiate for you in your stead with insurance companies, with hospitals, with doctor's offices, and they actually have negotiated a price of a discount for you. And it's across the country. So unlike an insurance company, there are no panels. You don't have to have pre-certifications. As long as it's medically necessary, it will be covered. And that means anything from cancer care to routine office visit. What you have to do as a member is be responsible for a maximum of $500 per calendar year in your shared amount. You pay anywhere from $100 to $199. Whether, you know, people under 30 pay less, people over 30 pay a maximum of $199, and you're covered up to $1 million per occurrence per year. So if you do get something catastrophic like cancer or some sort of, you know, big ticket item, you actually will only be responsible for $500 out of pocket. And the beauty of this system is that it's allowed under the Affordable Care Act, so you won't have to pay fines. Now, I'm a small business, you know, so I have a very small employee pool. And I got priced out of the insurance market years ago because it just kept going up. I decided I wanted to put my employees on this system. Mm-hmm. So now they're covered.
Right. I have employees too in my medical office. It's just amazing what's happening to the premiums. And, you know, fortunately, you know, many of our employees are married or they have coverage elsewhere. And we ask them, could you please, we'd love to keep you on our program, but it's going to cost you more and more. We used to do it for free. We didn't ask them for a single penny of copay. Now the prices are so high, we've had to pass along some of the prices to our employees, and it's prohibitive. So many of them have, you know, they just opted for their spouse's coverage.
And that's only getting more expensive as we speak as well. I mean, there's still a fine, a surcharge, a 25% surcharge on PPO plans under the Affordable Care Act. It hasn't even kicked in yet. So right. People are paying over almost $25,000 a year for a family of four. That's about to jump. So it's all about knowing that there's a parallel system. It's not insurance, but everybody had – this is, the marketing ploy that was used to pass the Affordable Care Act. If you don't have a health insurance, you're going to die. That was the meme that was trumpeted throughout the country. And actually, that is absolutely untrue. Most people don't even know or forget about the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, EMTALA. If you walk into any ER in this country, whether you're a citizen or not,
right,
you can get care for an emergency.
Yeah, this is true because one of the arguments for this is that people are being basically discarded in the street. They're dying. You know, they take them to the emergency room and they just push them out in the street so that they can expire in the gutter. And I've, mm-hmm. you know, you and I have both worked in emergency rooms, and you know, certainly part of our training was working in impoverished areas. Mine in New York City, yours possibly in the Atlanta region, and. We never turned anyone away. And I have to tell you that when I was at Bellevue and Jacoby Hospital, the vast majority of our patients were indigent, uninsured, immigrants without papers. We took them. We cared for them.
You're absolutely right. Actually, I trained in New York at Mount Sinai.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And so I'm a New Yorker, actually, initially. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And I don't care if you were homeless or you were from Park Avenue, you got the same standard of care.
Yeah.
And it was good. I mean, there was a baseline where it was expected that if you came in, you were kind of going to come out better than you came in. You were going to be healed. That's not the case anymore. I don't think the emergency rooms actually work the same way, to tell you the truth, because most of them aren't even staffed by medical doctors anymore. And they certainly aren't ER board certified doctors. They've moved on to the private setting. So what we're having now is a two-tier system, which has actually come online.
Yes.
Those who stay in the hospital system are being seen by extenders, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, moonlighting doctors. It's a different standard of care than on the private side, and it's a heck of a lot more expensive.
And alternatively, you know, one of the routes that you could have taken, Dr. George, is you could have said, look, I'm just going to exclusively do cosmetic procedures because, mm-hmm. as you know, an ENT can do rhinoplasty and can do, you know, quite extensive cosmetic surgery procedures, which are elective, lie outside the realm of insurance, not subject to insurance capitation, mm-hmm. and, you know, cash on the barrelhead, take it or leave it. And more and
exactly.
more doctors are doing that kind of thing.
Well, they're doing that, but they're also doing direct primary care. That's the other solution that I want to discuss.
Okay, good.
And that's an independent physician who has a direct cash base to their practice. So what they do is they have either a subscription model. I have one in my practice where people pay $50 a month, and any ENT problem that they have that I can handle in the office is covered for that $50.
That sounds a little concierge-y. Isn't it?
I mean, $50 a month?
No,
that's
but the concierge model is you pay like a big bucks. You know, you pay several thousand dollars so that you get, you know, 24/7 attention from a doctor who is, you know, limiting their practice and can afford to because their patients pay so much. I'm saying at least the model, it's like a kind of a membership thing, right?
That's a better look. That's a better example. It's a membership.
Yeah.
But if you think about a la carte, where you might pay $300 or $400 on an office visit for coming in for a sinus infection and needing telescopic examination versus $50 a month, mm-hmm. that when you come in, you're not paying anything else out of pocket. You get the scope, you get the hearing test, you get discounts on surgical procedures. Because in ENT, we've moved a lot from the hospital setting to the office setting,
right,
where we can control our costs. That's the key. The hospital setting is the prices are not real. You can't go into one and ask them.
One of the things that I've heard is that if you have the same procedure done in an outside office, on Fifth Avenue, as opposed to a few doors down in Mount Sinai Hospital, mm-hmm. Mount Sinai Hospital can charge three times as much for the procedure when it's done in the hospital as opposed to. So really, it forces people into the orb of the hospital system as opposed to, you know, getting an outpatient procedure, which is often more pleasant, can be safer. You get mm-hmm. more individualized attention, and there's less germs.
You've actually just hit, again, another point that's extremely important for patients to understand. And let me give you a little background on this, because this has gone across the nation the same way. In Atlanta, the hospitals, there were dozens of hospitals at one point. Now there's about three. And the surgery centers and all the freestanding outpatient surgery centers have either been bought out by these hospital settings and become part of their system, or they've gone out of business. And again, it's become too big to fail. And as soon as you have no competition, you control the price point. And they've been so aggressive in Atlanta that they've actually gone to our legislature and told them that if we can't have competition because we put out of business. So they stopped opening any private practice surgery centers run by, they closed them. So now we only have one left in Atlanta. We have one free radiology center in Atlanta. And it's everything else is hospital based.
So
as soon as they control the market, they control the cost.
So say you're an entrepreneur, or you as a physician, you got together with an entrepreneur mm-hmm. and you said, "Hey, I want to open up a great low cost facility in an impoverished area of Atlanta, and it's going to offer service to the community, and it'll be real close. It'll be in the heart of the community." The legislature would limit your charter, your ability to set up such a facility, because it would infringe on the monopoly of the hospital.
We can't do it. It's not allowed. Okay. It's called a certificate of need. They are no longer issued in Atlanta. So they've cut down, they put a kibosh on that. So ultimately, there's one freestanding surgery center left. And I can tell you, if I take a patient for a tonsillectomy at that privately run surgery center, it costs about $2,700. If I take them to the OR in the hospital basis, it's about $7,500. So you can see the difference. I'm doing the same procedure. It's the same equipment, but the price is completely different.
Here's a little anecdote. Is my father, who was actually born in 1910, he recalls getting his tonsils out. The doctor came to his house. They gave him a little anesthetic. They laid him out on the kitchen table with where there was a lot of light, and they removed his tonsils. End of story.
Wow.
and then he got to eat his ice cream. It doesn't require rocket science. Yes, there are complications. Yes, it can be dangerous, of course. But, you know, $7,500 for, I mean, goodness gracious.
Yeah. Well,
and the doctor, doesn't receive the $7,500.
Oh, no. The doctor gets $250 for the tonsillectomy.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, this is – my office manager had twins. The doctor who delivered her twins got $5,000. The hospital bill was over $100,000. So you have to look at the cost. The real drivers of the cost is not the doctor. I want your listeners to really understand that. We've just been drugged through the mud about how cost of health care is because doctors want to cut feet off, take tonsils out, they want to have a Mercedes. It is not us. It is everything else around the healthcare system, the other players, the hospital, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical industry. And I think we've been silent way too long because that's what doctors do. We don't complain. We just get it done. We see more patients. We add people to allow us to see more patients in our practice. We try to become more efficient. I think we've done everything that we've been asked to do. And at this point, the system, we can't give anymore. At this point, patient care is suffering. Morale is gone.
Well, do you also, I mean, a lot of doctors are retiring. I personally know a lot of doctors who say, look, you know, I can't do this anymore. They can't afford to do it anymore. And they just can't also, they don't have the stamina to deal with all the requirements, the regulations, and the insurance, documentation burdens. But what's also happening, it seems to me, is that medical profession is changing, and it's changing more. And, you know, maybe this is good. Some people think it's good, is that, you know, it's more of a 9-to-5 occupation. patient. Yeah. Hours are limited. Doctors want to have a balanced lifestyle. There are a lot more women getting involved in medicine, and they want to have time for their families, to raise their kids. It seems that it may be that less talented individuals are gravitating towards medicine because the hassles are big, the expenses are huge. You end up with this enormous debt, $300,000 or more in debt, and then you saddle with that for the rest of your life, and your income horizons are now severely limited.
I think that you're absolutely right about the pressures of being a physician. I don't subscribe to that, however. I don't think it is a 9-to-5 job. It never was. It never will be. We're trying to put it into this box that one size fits all. If you treat a patient with a certain medicine, they should get better in this certain amount of time. If that doesn't work, then it's something wrong with you. Well, I'm about the individual. I love what I do. I believe there's an art to medicine and a science. And that doesn't stop at 5 o'clock. If I get called at 9 o'clock at night or 10, I'm taking the call. I don't have somebody take my call for me. If I admit a patient to the hospital, I want to be the one taking care of that patient. Not a hospitalist taking care of 100 people where your patient is just a name. That's the problem. It's become a conveyor belt mentality of medicine, that it's evidence-based, it's driven by algorithms, and people don't work that way. That's not how you get people better. It's about listening. It's about having the time to get to know everything from the subtle cues of how your patient talks to you, how they're sitting in that chair, to what they actually say to you. And it's not happening anymore. Doctors are spending 7 minutes on average with their patient, and they're writing a prescription, they're running out the door. And I think patients are sick and tired of that, frankly.
And it's about continuity of care, too, which means that you don't just pass your patient off to a hospitalist. In effect, somebody else it's a surrogate who's taking care of, that person may phone you and tell you the progress of the patient, but that's about it.
Well, if you're lucky, they may not phone you. They just take care of your patient.
Exactly.
I've heard of people admitting them and they don't know anything till the person's discharged. That's unacceptable.
Right. Well, okay. Well, so what's today's intelligent medicine call to action? First of all, get your book. It's called Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System. And it's available how?
I can go to my website, drelenageorge.com, and buy it there. It's also on Kindle and on Amazon and on Kobo.
Okay. And that book should make a big sensation because it's an excellent critique of our current system, plus with solutions. So on the solution side, where can people learn more about some of the options that you discussed?
Well, they can definitely read it in the book. We talked a little bit about the tax code, but also, why don't we start something novel, like giving doctors a credit for their malpractice if they see a certain number of indigent patients. So let's say you have a $25,000 malpractice. If you see 10% patients for free, imagine 500,000 doctors seeing 10%, an increase of 10% of people who can't afford them, who don't have money. You'd actually take the burden off of the emergency room roles. You'd actually help people.
And you know why that won't happen?
Why?
Because the lawyers really want all those malpractice cases. And they really were chief architects of Obamacare. They really were in any rational reform of medical system, there's got to be malpractice reform. I think they authorized like a pilot project for $2 million to study it. In Obamacare, that multi-zillion dollar bill, they get paid lip service to, let's take a look at malpractice. We'll consider malpractice reform, but they don't want to change it. And this is actually a huge driver of costs. It also subjects patients to unnecessary tests, unnecessary radiation, not to mention outrageous costs. And the stress that it puts doctors under because, for a lot of our colleagues, it can be daunting to be subject to a lawsuit. One of the few professions where I think professionals are under the gun to that extent.
It's very true. And another statistic which most people don't know is that doctors win most of these malpractice suits. Mm-hmm. They're not guilty, so it's just frivolous most of the time because you can, because lawyers don't charge. It's by what? you pay when I win. Correct. Yeah. That's a bad deal. Another thing that could happen, which I think is pretty straightforward, change the insurance model a little bit. So if you have a huge deductible, you don't use it that year, it rolls over to the next year and limits your out-of-pocket expense. That would be reasonable to do. But again, the insurance company just want to collect premiums and not pay out. That's their model.
Well, they're making out like bandits with me because I pay my huge premiums and I never use I never use my medical insurance. But I got to pay it because, you know, otherwise I'm going to be, bare naked. You know, the term is bareback. You know, when you go ride a horse bareback, is you don't want to be out there bareback in the face of a potential accident or injury. Well, okay.
See, that's where medical cost sharing comes in. And last but not least is supplemental insurance like Aflac. So if you do get caught out there, they'll actually pay you if you have a heart attack, a stroke, cancer. $250,000, just a flat check to you if you get diagnosed with something. That's reasonable, and that costs pennies on the dollar per day. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways out there to fix this.
And the solutions we'll find in your book, Big Medicine. Thank you very much, Dr. Elena George. Thank you for your courageous stand on behalf of the medical profession and your continued idealism, because you got fire in the belly and you want the medical profession to continue to be what it's represented for so many years to the American public.
Absolutely.
Thank you again. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.